This is Bill Blatchford with the last A-game call of the year for Blatchford Solutions, sponsored by Blatchford Solutions, Care Credit, and Rocket Dog Dental. Rocket Dog Dental is a marketing company, providing marketing solutions for dentists. Of course, Care Credit provides financial solutions for patients to help you present and have accepted the type of treatments you'd like to have accepted. Tonight, I took the liberty this afternoon. We have over 100 doctors on this call, and I took the liberty to call a few of the attendees to find out what they were looking for. And I found a wide range of answers to that question. And I'd like to share those with you before I start. Before I start with those, Brian, are you on the call?
I'm here.
Very good. All right. So that's Brian from Bonita Springs in Naples, Florida. So here's what I found talking to the doctors today. You know, given the fact that the country seems to be in somewhat of a financial funk, I'll avoid the R word. I believe most of it's been created by the press. I think they've done an extremely effective job this time of creating this. I also want to point out that this occurs every few years in our economy, and we always recover. This is about similar to the one we went through back in 1987. And so if you take a look at that, you know, you're about 20 years later. This time it seems to be a little deeper, a bit of a funk that we're in, and doctors across the country are starting to feel it a little bit. So here are some of the responses that I got from doctors today in why they're on this call tonight. One doctor who's on the call joined our program after two calls back and has recovered over half his fee for the coaching program for the year in the last month and a half. He just wants to pick up a little bit more information what Brian is doing. I found several doctors who've actually decided to do something about the present situation, in other words, their current financial situation, and go ahead and join our program and are planning on joining before the end of the year. Some of them have decided to do something but are not sure what they're going to do yet. One of the things when I ask what they are thinking about, they've decided definitely not to just hope that things improve. And for those of you hoping things are going to improve, I hope things are going to improve also, and I'm quite confident in our economy. It will improve. Right now, we're in pretty much a worldwide economic funk. The United States is still the strongest. We're still the richest nation in the world. We have an educated workforce. We have lots of natural resources, and we have enough agricultural products to feed our nation, whereas most countries don't. So we're actually in a strong position. If you've done any traveling abroad recently, you realize the U.S. dollar has strengthened to about 25% on most currency markets. So the rest of the world thinks that we're going to recover as well. However, hope is a good strategy to run a presidential campaign on. From what reading I have done and what I have researched, hope is not a good business strategy. So those of you hoping things are going to improve, I guess the question is, really, what are you committed to? You know, what are you committed to? Are you committed to your current financial situation, hoping things will change, or are you actually doing something to improve your profitability? And some numbers that I think you might want to consider if you're considering your profitability is that if you're doing that $1 million practice at the national average of overhead of close to 70%, you might want to do a little calculations. A 10% reduction in gross actually reduces your net by about 40%. Some of you are actually starting to experience that in the last few months, so you might want to pay attention to that. I think another question that you need to ask yourself tonight as you listen to Brian is, what are the things that he has done? In other words, what made the difference for him? I'm going to call on Brian in a few minutes for a little bio of himself and what he's done with us and ask him some questions about this. But I think you want to ask yourself, who do you normally turn to for information about profitability, and how has that worked in the past? The reason I bring that up is from time to time I talk to doctors that want to run this by their accountant before they do anything different, and of course their accountants very often say they can increase their profitability for them. And I think the next question you need to ask yourself is, how long have you had this accountant, and why has he not done something, he or she done something about it to improve your profitability up until now? Their advice tends to be, stay the course. Recently, asking my accountant, for example, where to invest some money, he suggested burying it in the backyard. And I'm serious about that. He actually laughed as he said it, but he said, I can't tell you where to invest it. And I think it's interesting that we turn to people for financial advice that would suggest burying it in the backyard. In other words, sometimes stay the course, doing the same thing you're doing, and perhaps things will change. And I think the last question you want to ask yourself about improving your practice is, you know, what is the budget that you have allocated for practice development? And this is not practice marketing. This is practice development. In other words, how are you going, what is the budget for improving your business? And I think in the kind of economic situation we're in today, it's even more important that you actually set aside some money budget for development. You set aside some budget and time for team training. In other words, people are still spending money. And the thing to remember here is that the stock market affects a small percent, I mean, it affects all of us, but it affects a small percentage of people who are actually living on their stock portfolio. So that's a couple of groups of people. One, that would be trust funders. Two, it's people who have fully retired and are now living on the proceeds of that portfolio. So that's not a huge percentage of our population. That would be people not just retired and on pension plans that are paying a guaranteed amount out, but people who are truly living on that portfolio. And then we have another group of people in the economy that are affected by this situation, and that's the 7 or 8% that are truly unemployed. Now, that probably leaves about 85% of people in the middle that are still earning full salary, full wages, fully employed, and many of their expenses have actually gone down, price of energy for one. But these people are being hesitant to spend money, but they're still spending it. But I think we have to get better at what we do. We have to get better at sales skills. We have to market more effectively. And we've got to do a better job business-wise because people are still spending money. So having said all of that, I want to point out to you that Brian has been with us for about 18 months. He joined us in the summer of 07. Brian's father is a dentist, or was a dentist, in Bonita Springs. That's the Naples, Florida area. He's just been with us for a short period of time. So, Brian, why don't you give us a short bio on your background, how long you've been practicing, how you ended up in Bonita Springs, and how you joined us and what you've done since.
Great. I grew up in Southwest Florida. I'm from Fort Myers, Florida, right nearby, a little town nearby. I went to Temple University for dental school in Philadelphia, same dental school as my father and my uncle and my grandfather and my cousin and my brother. So we're all dentists. So it's in the blood. I graduated from Temple University in 1998, so I've been out for about 10 years now. I worked in my cousin and uncle's practice in Lansdale, Pennsylvania for 3 years, a little over 3 years, and then decided to come back down to sunny Southwest Florida, where I worked for another dentist for about 4 years, 3 to 4 years. And in that time, my goal was to get out and open my own practice, and it took me some time, and finally laid the work down to do it, and I've had I've been solo now for about 3.5 years. May will be 4 years. So I've been almost 4 years in Bonita Springs, Florida.
Okay, now you joined our program about a year and a half ago. And what were you looking for when you joined?
I'd gotten a lot of advice from friends and dentists, and I've seen a lot of different ways to run practices. And after practicing for 6-7 years, I figured where my niche, where I really wanted to be. And I knew that I really enjoyed cosmetic dentistry. I tried all aspects of general dentistry, and I really enjoyed cosmetics. So when I opened up my own practice going solo, I really wanted to focus on cosmetics and higher-end dentistry. I knew that I couldn't eliminate all aspects of dentistry, and I really didn't want to, but I knew that I wanted to have a niche practice. I really had no idea how to market a niche practice. I knew my younger brother had just started doing the same thing on his own, and we were kind of bouncing things off of each other. But I really knew I had my vision of what I wanted, but I really didn't know how to get there. And it came to a point that I really didn't want to spend years and years or decades trying to figure out my path, knowing where I wanted to end up, and all I really needed was just the guidance to get me there.
If I could just throw this in, your brother, Jason, and his wife, Colleen, are clients of ours as well, and they've set up a cosmetic practice. We actually had them on one of these calls almost a year ago. They're up in Jacksonville, Florida. So you got a lot of advice from him. You talked to a lot of other dentists about how to create this vision. In other words, you kind of did the do-it-yourself route that so many dentists do, if I can just get that last piece of information.
Well, that's exactly where I was. I was doing it myself. And along with the do-it-yourself dental practice, it's really a do-it-yourself business. And I really didn't have that much business experience, and that's what it is. It's running a business.
And so you were doing fairly well. Why don't you tell us kind of where you were, you know, financially when you started with us?
Sure. My first solid year of practice, before starting with you, I produced about $550,000. And that was my second year solo. I was working about 4 days a week, which to me was very good for being a second year practice in a startup business. I started with no patients. I didn't purchase another practice. I just opened my doors. But that was 2006, and 2007, my production jumped about $250,000 in my first year with you, Dr. Blatchford.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, and this year, still with you, I'm still on board with Blatchford Solutions. I'm gonna hit the $1 million mark.
Okay. Now, you in Naples, Florida, and Bonita Springs, you have what's called the season and the off-season.
Correct.
And you've had production months that have ranged very high, and you've had some that have gone quite low.
Right.
Brian, what was your highest month last winter?
Last winter, we had a $200,000 month.
And how were you staffed for that?
We are there's me, my wife Erin, who is our smile consultant, and I have a full-time dental assistant. I have two part-time hygienists that each work one day every other week. So I have one hygiene day a week.
And so you have just two employees.
Basically two full-time employees.
And your staff is... Now, let's talk about what we did this year to balance out this high season in Bonita Springs. For those of you who know the Southwest Florida area, they have a tremendous influx of people for the winter months, and then they disappear in the summertime. And when the tourists disappear in the summertime, the tourists and the snowbirds disappear. Of course, a lot of jobs go away. So a lot of those people are somewhat transient as well, and they move to places where there's more employment. So what did you do this year to balance that out and get rid of the ups and downs a little bit?
Well, in the summers we take a little bit more time off, so that balances out a little bit. And we do still do a fair bit of cosmetic dentistry in the summer, just because we're a snowbird area. We still have... What's unique about this area is not that we can be seasonal, but that most people do seasons here with the goal in mind to make this their permanent residence, maybe once they've retired or their kids are a little bit older. And so we can actually start to convert some part-time residents into full-time patients. And in the summers, we added, in this past year, we've added sleep apnea treatment, making the appliances for sleep apnea. I've included oral sedation, which increases my treatment acceptance. We do cosmetic dentures, and
it sounds like you have added several services to your practice to offer. Tell us a bit about your staffing. I mean, you're doing $1 million with two staff members. Two and a quarter. Tell us how you do that. I mean, there are people on this call. I've talked to several of them that are, you know, they're doing $1 million. They have six staff members, and the staff members are calling for more help every day. How do you do this, Brian? How do you do this with two people?
With two people, what we did was we got rid of staff members and did what you recommended and turn our staff into team members and having a key team. When you talk about team players, you're talking about a group of people that work together, work to help each other. They have their job description plus they have your job description. So everybody really works together to get the job done. So they won't push something off on somebody else and say, hey, this is not for me to do, this is for you to do. And to make it even more cohesive is that we're all on the same page. We talk about everybody knows about everybody's treatment. All the patients have been talked about and discussed. And so if I presented some treatment to a patient, Aaron knows what kind of treatment that patient needs to have and treatment plan for. And my assistant, Lindsay, knows how to schedule those appointments for her. And therefore, it's so cohesive that we don't spend a lot of time. We don't waste a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So we can be very efficient.
So when you started with us, you were doing about $500,000 to $600,000. And how many team members you have then?
Well, we had a couple more. We had one more staff member full time. But really, to be honest with you, when we really turned the corner with you was also when I brought in my wife to be our smile consultant, our scheduling coordinator in the office. And that really is, to me, probably one of the biggest impacts to our practice in treatment acceptance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Erin is fantastic. I've actually had Erin, Brian's wife, actually do some conferences with some of our other offices on telephone technique, et cetera, because it's critical. A lot of you, as a matter of fact, some of you when I talk to today, while you're on it, some are looking for more new patients, and that's always, I don't think there's a doctor out there that's not looking for more new patients. I was at the athletic club the other morning on the elliptical trainer watching the news, and I was watching Wagner from General Motors when asked by someone in Washington, D.C. what was the biggest problem in the automotive industry, and he said, well, it's not our capacity to produce automobiles, it's the demand of automobiles, and their sales are down 40%. So they're looking for more new customers as well. Everybody is. But one of the things that we found is that a lot of doctors have a fairly good new patient flow, that is, pretty good number of people calling the office, but they're not being handled correctly once the phone rings. As a matter of fact, I recently did, my consultants and I did a little telephone polling. We're just calling dental offices, and, you know, we were posing as patients. Interesting thing is we found only about between 20 and 25% of the offices we called actually, where they actually ask us to, if we would like to make an appointment. We called with various situations from the fact that I'm new in town, I'm looking for a new dentist, to I'm considering having some cosmetic dentistry done, or I just have some general things I'm concerned about, and we found that only between 20 and 25 of the offices, they were just offices picked out of the phone book at random. They were our clients, just people right out of there, that only 20 to 25% were the receptionists actually ask us if we'd like to go ahead and make an appointment. The usual response we got was, do you have any other questions? No, that's great. We got a lot of questions answered, but they didn't ask if we wanted to make an appointment. And we weren't asked to make an appointment, we didn't. So that doctor would report that he's not getting enough new patients when, in fact, the phone is probably ringing, but they're not handling it correctly. So Erin's done an excellent job of handling that. She's used the scripts that we've provided her with. And then once they arrive in the office, you call her a smile coordinator. What does she do then?
Well, once she presents the patients and actually sits down with them and goes over all their new patient paperwork, then she'll bring the patient into a private consultation room, and she'll go through all the, we call the Blatchford questions, and gets to the core of the patient and finds out exactly what they want. Erin's hits all the emotional buttons, and basically sells the treatment before they even come back to see me. So she finds out really what they want.
I know Erin does an excellent job of finding out what they want. I know she goes ahead and talks about possibilities. She also talks about budgets at that time, I believe.
She does. Every patient.
This is even before they've seen you.
Right.
So she's basically, and this is what we see in so many of our clients, that the person at the front, whoever that person is, actually has this conversation, literally presents not the details of the case, but generalities of the case and what the patient's, from what the patient has said they're interested in, what their wants are, and then starts talking budgets. By the time they get to the doctor, it's really a matter of, let's ask Brian. So, Brian, what's your role then? I mean, Erin's already sold this case. What do you do? What do we need you for?
Really? In an ideal world, all Erin wants me to do is to come into the room, introduce myself, and say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can do that.
In an ideal world, that's exactly what she wants. She wants me to come in and say, I can do this. Right. No details.
Well, let's say in the real world, what happens?
I'll come in and that is the real world. She'll stare me down across the room if I start giving details or giving too many options for the patient. But the way it's supposed to go is I walk into the room and I say, yes, I can do that for you. It's a possibility. And then I'll leave Erin with them to discuss payment breakdown, appointments. So really a consultation with me should only take about 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And then once the patient decides, go ahead. Then if the patient decides yes, we still do a detailed treatment planning, but not until they decide to go do the treatment.
Right.
Brian, about what is your new patient flow per month?
New patients vary. Erin, do you know about what our average new patients a month are?
It's only about 10.
About 10 patients a month?
Yeah, about 10 new patients a month.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good flow, but for those of you doing the calculations here, this is a practice that's not very hygiene driven, which is, it's very interesting. If you're several of the offices I talked to today have relatively mature practices, and the more mature the practice is, the more hygiene patients you're going to have. But this is a relatively young practice, but I picked Brian to be on this call because I felt he's got a real good message of how you can build a practice quickly if you don't spend several years reinventing the wheel. It's interesting. I talked to several of the doctors this afternoon, and many are much more, I don't want to say more mature than Brian because it makes him sound younger, but immature, but I mean doctors have been with more experience, been at it for many years, and they're doing, maybe not the same production or maybe about the same production, but they're doing it with 5 and 6 employees. And here's Brian working here 4 days a week doing the million with basically 2 and a quarter people without a big backlog of hygiene to call on for patients. So your treatment basically comes out of your new patients. So it takes a pretty effective marketing program and also takes very effective case presentation skills to get that much treatment out of 10 new patients. What percentage of your treatment comes from, or the percentage of new patients come from internal marketing, and what comes from external, and what are some of the external methods you're using?
Well, guess our influx of new patients varies. I think that we do get a majority of our cosmetic patients from magazine. We do some very nice print ads in magazines. We do some newspaper advertising. But you know what? Aaron probably could correct me on this, but I think that a lot of our larger cases, new patients, come from referrals from other specialists.
Mm-hmm. From specialists.
It's a mix. It's a mix between internal and external. It's really even across the board from the web, our website, to specialists that refer us patients. We do have a lot of doctors and specialists in the area that send us patients. And then as well as, like, we turn sometimes emergency patients that come in our door into Smile Design. So, you know.
What specialists?
We have oral surgeons. We have periodontists, general dentists in the area.
Yeah, I think this is one of the areas that most general dentists don't take advantage of is the specialist. And, you know, I always want to remember that, and most general dentists don't even cultivate the specialist as referral sources. That's the thing. It always amazes me when I start to work with a new client is what have they done in the past to cultivate the referral base of the specialist? There's a constant flow of patients from the general dentist to the specialist, but specialists, for example, periodontists are good sources because they see patients who are transferred from other places in the country, and if they're undergoing any kind of periodontal therapy, in one part of the country when they transfer, you know, they want to see a periodontist within 3 months. So they seek a periodontist, and they generally get that periodontist through a referral from their current periodontist before they move. And they don't have a general dentist in the new area. And so they're an excellent source of patients, and it can develop. And yet I find very few general dentists even work on that or even know what to say to them. My best friend's an orthodontist, and a majority of his adult transfer patients come to his office from a referral from their orthodontist from wherever they move from. He happens to be in Portland, Oregon, and the patients come in. And so they finish up their ortho treatment not having a general dentist to turn to, and when he finishes up with them, he very often talks to them about perhaps doing veneers on those teeth to make them absolutely look gorgeous, and they don't have a general dentist to refer to. So there's a big source there, and most doctors, I think, neglect to do that. So it's a good source. Tell us a little bit about some of the systems you put in place since you started to work with us to allow you to do this kind of production with just, well, with one person in the front. Aaron, you're right there. You're there, so welcome to the call. What are some of the things that you do? What are some of the things that we've eliminated for you that you don't do anymore so you can handle this kind of production at the front?
Well, keep in mind, I wasn't in our office prior to joining your program, so really all I know is the Blatchford way, and I'm kind of glad of that. I don't have any dental experience, so I still don't know the numbers of the teeth, nor do I want to know.
So you don't know the numbers of the teeth, and
no.
Yet you're able to discuss with patients in a very effective manner and sell these cases.
Yeah, I think that's why. I think if I start learning any of the dental terminology, I'm gonna scare away the patients just like Brian does if he gets too clinical. So I can relate to patients in a way that he can't. So it's like, you know, dentistry dumbed down. I can talk to a patient on their level and they get what I'm saying.
Very good. Well, I have to comment here that when we first met Brian and Aaron, Aaron really wasn't in the dental office at that time, wasn't considering being in the dental office, and informed us she knew nothing about the business. And when I asked, and by the way, we at Blatchford do not make it a point that spouses should or should not work in the office. We have no position on it. We have no agenda as to how an office should be. The only agenda we have is to follow the vision of the client. And in Brian's case, his vision was extremely clear. And I think he made it more clear starting to work with us. I know that day in Seattle that we met for a day, he became much more clear what he wanted to accomplish. But we have no agenda as to how the practice should go. But Aaron decided to join the practice and take the place of a person who was there. And since she knew nothing about it, we had no bad habits. And this is
right.
This is actually was a benefit in this case, because so often when we suggest ways of doing things, what we hear is resistance, why it won't work. So Aaron, what are the things that, when we first started to work, were being done in the front that are now being done by in the treatment rooms, both in hygiene and in operative?
I could say that block booking that we do now up front, as well as in the back in the treatment rooms, block booking has really made a huge difference in our practice. And the way that we take care of the patient from the time they come in to the time they leave, they get greeted right at the door. They get the paperwork. I kind of do along with them as I'm talking to them about their smile. It's not like, here's the paperwork, sit down, fill it out, bring it up to me when you come up. Back in the treatment room, our hygienists can walk patients out. They can talk about treatment. They can schedule them in the back. They take care of everything. If I'm on a call making a new patient appointment, Lindsay, our hygienist, takes care of everything else for me. So it's just a great synergy between everyone.
Your hygienist actually collects money for their treatment.
Yes, whatever it takes, we all do. That's really our team motto.
Mm-hmm.
Do whatever it takes to get a job done.
So the hygienist and the assistant can both collect money, if I'm correct.
That's correct.
And they can both make appointments.
Yes.
They can both answer questions about, insurance, for example.
They sure can. They can answer any question.
I mean, you're not driven. Your practice is not such an insurance-driven practice, and that's by Brian's design not to be completely insurance-driven, but you still have patients with insurance.
Absolutely. I still get questions probably on a daily basis about insurance or what will insurance cover for this treatment. It's mm-hmm. not an uncommon question, even though we don't take insurance as a payment.
And you can, and anybody can answer those questions.
Right, anybody can answer that. Anyone can answer any question. I don't think anyone's ever said, I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now let's talk about, Aaron, if you're tied up with a patient on the phone or you're tied up with a patient, can your hygienist or your dental assistant effectively have this new patient interview?
Yes, and thank mm-hmm. goodness, because that happens on a daily basis.
Excellent. And how did you select people and train people to actually be able to do this interview? Because you're getting, with 10 new patients and literally nothing coming out of hygiene, doing $1 million, I mean, you're doing 80,000 a month average. I think this year you're going to break well over $1 million from the numbers I've seen. Everybody's doing a pretty effective job at this new patient interview and doing this new patient. How much time do you devote to training?
We have a meeting. We should spend more, but I say we have about a meeting once a month in each office. We spend several hours each month training.
And what part has Blatchford Consultants or Seminars played in that? What have you done there?
We can thank Blatchford for everything. In fact, our team is what it is because of going through the Blatchford program. So we brought our team along with us that very first meeting that we had together, and everyone either... One person got fired that just couldn't bring it, and everyone else stepped up to the plate. And, it was all through what we learned with you.
I appreciate that comment. I want everybody on the line to hear that, of course, what they all list to Blatchford. That was perfect. That was the whole purpose of tonight's call, Aaron. But I want to be a little more specific. What part and how does your team interact with Blatchford? I mean, you did have you had a two-day seminar, which you brought your team members to, with the exception of one team member who didn't want to come, and she was replaced. Which, by the way, is strong leadership on the part of the doctor. I mean, many doctors on this call would love to do something to improve their profitability, but many have this fear that their team might not want to go along with some changes. Brian or Aaron, how did you respond with that?
Well, the truth is that Aaron and I had our vision. We knew where we wanted to be. We knew where we wanted to go. And if our, at the time, staff members weren't going to be on the journey with us, then they weren't the right person for our office.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really needed, and one of the reasons I needed a coach, was because, I can admit I'm not a good leader. I'm a very conscientious person. I'm what you call the S the S of the family. I want to be everybody's friend. And in being everybody's friend, you don't want to, sometimes you just don't want to step up to the plate and make a decision or do something that could hurt somebody's feelings. And I knew that within myself, but I knew that I had to have leadership qualities in order to run a good business and to have a successful practice. So, go on.
Well, you've had a lot of coaching. Brian, you take part in some very strenuous athletic events, I remember.
Sure.
You took part in a couple Ironmen this year.
I generally do at least one full Ironman a year with some half Ironmans to get myself warmed up.
So now that I've heard that everybody in the call hates you, but go ahead.
That's why I do it, so that everybody will hate me.
Yeah, so a full Ironman.
Actually, I do. The whole purpose for me for doing a full Ironman is, can you imagine the amount of calories I burn in one day? That allows me to eat quite a bit. So I triathlons just allow me to eat whatever I want.
Excellent. Yeah, and you stay very, very slim. Okay, so you've had a lot of coaching then in those athletic events.
Sure.
And how do you compare the coaching? Go ahead.
I wouldn't do an Ironman cold turkey. I definitely needed guidance for an Ironman, just as I do for, just as I do for running and practice.
And let me ask you, I just want to make some comparisons here, because there are a lot of doctors in this call that will wonder, well, what does a coach do in a dental office? What does he teach that you don't already know? I guess the question would be, what does an Ironman coach teach you that you don't know when you say you're going to? I've never done an Ironman. I've done some marathons. And a marathon is a very simple procedure. You simply run.
Right.
You put your feet
right,
one in front of the other for 26 miles, 285 yards. And when you pass that last yard, you're done. It's real simple. It doesn't take a lot of athletic ability. It just takes some determination. And so what does an Ironman coach do for you?
Well, an Ironman coach, just like you said, well, an Ironman coach doesn't teach me how to run because I know how to run. An Ironman coach can't really teach me how to swim because I know how to swim. But an Ironman coach can teach me running mechanics, how to fine-tune. They can teach me swimming mechanics, how to properly rotate my body in the water so that I can be more efficient and faster.
Mm-hmm. So the nuances of it.
Right. A good coach can teach me how efficiency on my bike and proper form, proper fit. And most importantly, I could never do an Ironman without nutritional coaching, which is an aspect that if you don't have proper nutrition and hydration, you're not even going to make it out of the water. So there's
which
a lot
the
of
aspects. Event.
Which is the first event.
And what about the accountability side of it? Do you report mileage and times and that sort of thing to your coach?
Yes, I do. I can report anything I want to my coach, and he can analyze what I do and how my training is. But it's not all about what I report to my coach. It's more to it than that. Just reporting my mileage.
Mm-hmm. There's right.
It's advice.
Go ahead.
It's advice. It's I have only a certain amount of time or days to do for certain events. How do I maximize my time and how am I more efficient? I have a full work schedule. I have two children. I'm married. How can I maximize my time and be?
So you didn't have a lot of time to just waste on this Ironman.
Nope.
So let me ask you this question. And how does Blatchford's coaching, how is my coaching with you similar to what you did with your Ironman coach? I mean, what, because I didn't come into your office. I've never been to your office. And yet we've doubled your production. We've done it with less staff, and I've never seen your office. But how did my coaching help you get these kind of results?
Well, your coaching helped my leadership ability, helped get my staff to a team, helped get got my team behind me, helped them realize my vision, and their coaching helped me give them the training that they needed in order to you know, to fulfill our vision, to teach the patient, to help inform the patient of the kind of dentistry that we can do for them, and how to make it possible for them to get this done. Without you, I would be working 5 days a week, booking myself 8 to 5. Whereas I can see the same patients. I can do more production in two-thirds of the time. I can work 3 days a week and still make the same production collection goals on a three-day work week that I was trying to do on a five-day work week.
Excellent. Well, let's ask a question. So Brian has taken this practice. We've literally in 18 months have doubled the practice. We've done it with less people in less time. He's raised his net considerably, as you can do the math on that and figure that one out. Let's open this up to some questions from from our audience. And there's quite a few people on this call. So if you're muted, you'll have to hit the *6 and then ask your question. And when you hit *6, expect a few moments before we can hear you.
Well, let me add one more thing that you helped me do this year. As you asked me what I did over the summer to increase my production, is we purchased another practice, a general dentist practice, this summer.
Excellent.
And I've taken a 4 day a week general dentistry practice, and incorporated that into my 5 day work week. Now I work 3 days a week in my Bonita office, and I've taken a 4 day work week for our Naples office and made it a 2 day work week. So essentially, I'm working two full time practices in 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Now I'm working 5 days a week, but it's not our goal to consistently work 5 days a week. Our goal is to incorporate two full-time practices down into one
and
practice.
The numbers that Brian shared with you a moment ago are for his for his Bonita Springs practice, and the other part-time practice he shared with me today, he's doing an additional $40,000 a month over there. And that's strictly a general practice, and that was what I was getting at when I said, what have you done to smooth out the seasons? Because, you know, Brian has gone from very high months in the season to lower months in the Bonita Springs practice, the Naples practice became available, and I said, go for it. I mean, it's the fastest way to grow a practice there is to buy a patient base, and we work out a schedule so we can do them both. Now, within a year, he'll be back down to 4 days a week total, but it's been a great growth. He's an extra $40,000, and of course, with two part-time employees in that office, he also runs it at 50% overhead. But as he shared with me, he wouldn't have had the courage to even think about that without me saying yes. I've had their clients do this, and it works well. So he's pretty much recession-proofed his practice. We're not even concerned about this recession coming along in this situation. Yeah. Okay, questions from our audience.
Bill, this is Carla Lamberton from Napa.
Yes. Carla, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you. I had one quick question. What percentage of the advertising, what percentage of the gross is the advertising budget?
Brian, can you answer that?
I can answer, and Aaron will probably correct me. I think we're at about 8. We're definitely about 8%. At times we go to 10%, so we 8 to 10% of our gross.
We spent more last year.
When you included sleep apnea into your practice, did you take the Ira Shapiro class, and how much has that helped with the production?
I did take Ira Shapiro's class. That's helped a lot. I think that. Ira is a very detailed person, and he presented a lot of detail in the medical as well as the dental side of sleep apnea, and I got a lot of confidence from his course.
He also presents the business side of it.
And he does, as well as the business side.
Ira is also a client of ours, and he was a subject to one of these calls a few months ago as well.
I think I have.
Good. Carla, I haven't talked to you for a while. Nice to hear from you.
Good to talk to you.
I remember Carla's, for those of you on the call, is a dentist in Napa, California, and about 15 years ago they came to me with request to get off Delta Dental Insurance completely. And Cecil is a very accomplished dentist. He's accredited with AECD. He's an instructor at the FACE Institute. And California, for those of you in California, know that Delta has about a 70% market share, and he was tired of reducing his fees. And so during that year, we simply changed the relationship with Delta Dental, and they haven't been on Delta for how long, Carla?
I'm guessing 12 to 13
yeah,
years now.
Probably. Yeah, time goes by in a hurry, but
yeah, and we love it.
Good.
We love every day of that.
Yeah. I saw your name on the list. Thanks for being here. Other question. So we've got Brian at about an 8 to 10% budget for marketing. He's also doing some sleep apnea. That's another way to broaden the practice.
The sleep apnea is definitely a very exciting part of the practice. It's been growing pretty steadily for the last couple months now. We've been a little bit slow to really start to generate that side of the practice, but just within the last, I'd say, four to five months, we've really begun to network that hard. I've met a lot of specialists, pulmonologists, sleep centers, family physicians, even ear, nose, and throat doctors and cosmetic surgeons. These are all great people to tap for referrals for sleep apnea. And we've hit a sweet spot with our marketing. We've hit some good locations to put our ads for sleep apnea. And we're actually getting a lot more calls in sleep apnea than we are with some of our cosmetic dentistry.
And what gave you the idea to get into sleep apnea?
Well, that was you, Bill.
Oh.
That was the purple
well,
cow.
Here's an interesting thing. We've got a lot of listeners on this call tonight. And I think the interesting thing is that so many doctors are looking for that one last pearl of the year that's going to change their practice for 2009. And I'm going to invite everyone on this call to take a real good look at what we have to offer. Any of our consultants can call you and will call you and take the call or schedule a time to sit down with each one of these people, and at no charge we will do what we call a profit potential assessment. We will sit down with you at a phone. You don't have to take time out of your schedule much. We will call you and set up an appointment and do this. And the interesting thing is that in 2007 and 2008's numbers aren't all in yet, but in 2007, we averaged between $100,000 and $150,000 of increase in net for every client we took on. Looking at the numbers that I'm seeing, and we have numbers up through October at this point, it looks like we're going to do better than that this year across the board. And so given that kind of increase in profit, given the fact that if you have any taxable income for the year 2008, and most of you do, enroll in this program before the end of the year, and you can write off at least $20,000 of actual tax. In other words, it'll pay for over half the course, or about half of the course, just in tax savings. And yet next year, you will increase your net from $100,000 to $150,000. So take the call when it comes in and set up a time. There's no charge. There's no obligation for that. And for those of you who already made your decision, make sure the person you get a hold of this and make sure that you keep moving forward and get it wrapped up before the end of the year, because you have to have paper signed money in to be able to deduct the taxes this year. So do we have any other questions from any of the audience out there? I've got about 5 minutes left here for questions.
Well, if nobody's going to say anything,
yes, sir.
I'm sure that people are tired of hearing me. Carla Lamberton again. If somebody is on the fence, Cecil and I talk about this routinely, how deciding to go with Blatchford Solutions in the 32 years we've been in dentistry is one of the high points, one of the best decisions we've made financially, not wanting to work five days a week anymore, and just generally for your well-being. I'm saying it's a good deal.
Carla, I really appreciate that 12 years ago, it's the program.
I haven't talked much in 12 years.
Thank you for being here. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Have a nice holiday. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome. My pleasure.